Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and today I know we're still in COVID-19 pandemic, but we're going to try and be a bit more upbeat and focus on, you know, the good things that could come out of this. There are good things that could come out of this. One thing that might come out of this, but I'm kind of hoping doesn't, is my co-host Martin. How are you?
Yeah. I'll see you into the ground. I've told you that before.
Listen, folks, I know that, well, look, I really do. I hope enough of you have checked out our new podcast, Glow West, with Dr. Caroline West. It is it is the most awkward podcast I've ever had to edit, because it terrifies me, because it's about sex, the body, and sexual wellness, and I couldn't even get that out without stuttering. So listen, check it out, and make sure, if you can, throw us a couple of quid on Patreon, help us keep the mics on, keep Martin going a bit longer. Anyway, enough about that. We're delighted to be joined on the line by the Green Party's Saoirse McHugh. Saoirse, how are you keeping?
Great now, great actually. To be honest, my life hasn't changed much. I realise how little social interaction I do when I see everyone talking about how awful it is, and I'm like, oh yeah, oh, it's awful not going out anywhere and seeing your friends, which I have loads of. I'm just not.
I saw a brilliant tweet by Kira Kenny saying, yes, I have a boyfriend. You just wouldn't know him. He lives outside the 2 kilometer exclusion zone.
That's very good. Yeah. That's very good.
But this is the way we're all living now, except for when you go, as Martin said before we started recording, when you look outside, at least you've got some actual beautiful sights to see, as opposed to I'm 2 kilometers from the M50, which is which isn't the same. But I suppose it'd be mad not to ask about the last, I would call it a concerted campaign to get the Greens to become a mudguard. So I said it myself online, and I think Nessa Horrigan has been putting up videos and giving people a feedback on what is actually happening on inside these meetings, and I think they're playing a very good playing a blinder, to be frank. They might not get the airtime that other elements are getting. How are you seeing it?
Well, I suppose I've obviously, everyone knows my position on coalition, and I think what a lot of the reporters have, you know, some of them I've been a bit shocked at. Like, it's kind of this blatant, you need to go in, you need to have Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, and is forgotten that many other parties, and maybe them once upon a time as well, wanted to govern not just for the sake of power, but to get things done. So they don't understand that if the Greens are saying, oh, well, you know, in the initial talks, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael said, no, we won't be able to do any of these things. And the Greens are like, oh, well, then we have no interest in power. I think because to Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, power is the end game now.
Yeah.
I think they just can't understand it. Like, because, sure, who knows what Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael want to achieve except to be in power. It's their main kind of driving force, I think. So a lot of the frenzy around it then, I think, is a lot of just reporters who have also bought into that and who can't imagine that maybe it won't be Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael propped up by someone else. And I don't think it would pass the Fianna Fáil membership. Like, you know, I just can't imagine it would. Fianna Fáil, as I've spoken to, I know that's, you know, super anecdotally.
Yeah.
But they don't want to go in with Fine Gael. Nobody wants to go in with Fine Gael. They wouldn't go in last time with Fine Gael.
It's mad to think that the party that finished third in the overall is the one that everybody's saying you have to put them back into power, and you're like, oh, well, where's the respect for the democratic voice of the people? And you know, and then I think it's absolutely shameful that certain journalists allowed Leo Varadkar say that he called for unity government with the exclusion of people I don't like. The very definition of what the opposite of unity. And then I do think it's very, 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 very much so clear to people of our ilk that, you know, when you have the political editor of the Irish Times saying that this is, you know, they have to do this thing, and then, you know, saying with a deputy editor in the Independent that the Greens are letting down everybody, this is nonsense. I mean, and Fine Gael are getting off the hook for excluding a large part of the electorate. Look, I don't want to go on about it too much. We're kind of, because we're too much in consensus here, and we can't have a fake. We can't have a fake.
Well, that's where I was just going to come in, and I was going to say, you two are so off the ball. Pull on the green jersey. Stop your complaining. Leo gave an absolutely fabulous speech. Okay, a fabulous speech. Every word saves lives. Every word. And you two are just off the ball.
Yeah, no, I got to take it back.
Doesn't it sound so weird to get that message all the time? Doesn't it sound so weird?
I was talking to a journalist who is renowned for being really pro Fine Gael, and we were talking off the record, and so now I'm going to tell you what we said. And I was saying, well, I think it'll play out. I think Fine Gael will resist, and then they'll support the unity government. So they said they weren't going to go into government at all in the beginning. And they said, it's a different this time. It's a deep ideological problem with Sinn Féin. And I was like, oh, ideological purity, that's where that'll get you.
Yeah.
And they, without a hint of self-reflection, goes, well, you know, Saoirse, some people could accuse you of that. And I was like, yeah, that's the joke.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah.
And they were, right, yeah. Okay. Never mind.
Speaking of, I suppose, ideological purity, and we'll use that term because you used it first. You put up an interesting tweet last week where you said, you know what, it was more or less, give us your ideas, give us your solutions, give us your, you know, what comes next. And Saoirse, I know you long enough to know that we spoke previously about things like, you know, what a Green New Deal for Ireland might look like and what these things are. Do you want to give listeners an idea of where your thinking is on that? I know it's only in the nascent stages, but you know, this is the kind of thing it's nice to have something to look forward to and hope for, and a vision that we can plan for.
Yeah, well, and I suppose I was thinking, I've been thinking about it for a while, but as everyone knows, I suppose, when everything can change, and so I was thinking, right, like, you know, if this could go on for a couple of months and then like that, what will we not be able to unsee? Will they be able to go back to saying, no, Airbnb is not causing a problem? And I think it'll be very important that people are already starting to decide what they don't want to give back afterwards. And what, you know, we've been shown what we can do as a country and what's actually possible. And I know, like, I sound like such a 19-year-old young fella, but, like, you know, everyone realizes now that the economy is really just kind of what people say it is. It's not, you know, we can just decide, oh no, we don't do that anymore. These aren't these like rules of nature given to us. And I think from that it shows like the Airbnb, I don't think, or now maybe we will go back, but I think there's a huge opportunity now for us to say we're never giving back that kind of control of the property. Obviously I would love to see it go further, huge rent strikes, all houses are, you know, just open game, but whatever. I'll make do with, you know, no more Airbnb. Same with healthcare. Like, will we ever be able to go back?
No.
I don't think people will ever unsee us, you know, having a healthcare system where it is access based on need rather than ability to pay.
Well, and Susan, Susan Mitchell just in the last few minutes put up, she linked in a piece where there's research and people have crunched the numbers. And if you go into lockdown, you are looking at 18 months minimum of restrictions, 18 months minimum of restrictions. Now, they may not always be lockdown, but they are going to be variations of being locked down. And that's the time frame that people need to look at. And my view on it is, after 18 months of lockdown, there may not even be a Fianna Fáil or a Fine Gael or a Green Party or a Labour or a Sock Dems. There may not be. There may not be. I think these people are trying to hang on to something that may not survive.
Martin, we're trying to be positive here and talk about what can come next.
Oh, yeah, but No.
That
I think
they're not positive.
No, that's not an unpositive thing. Is unpositive the correct way to say it?
He's gone full Orwellian, unpositive.
It's not a negative thing. What you hope for is something better, that you can actually get people working together. You know, all in this together is the phrase. Now, you can't, on the one hand, say all in it together and then go back to what Enda Kenny had said some years back. I didn't mean ye, I just meant ye. You know, so you can't. If you're going to be all in it together, you have to put your money where your mouth is.
Yeah.
And you have to put your money where your mouth is. And Varadkar is a notoriously bad at making decisions. Notoriously bad at making decisions. And if he doesn't make the decision, somebody has to make it for him. It's in the best interests of the country.
And I also think as well, so if it goes on for 18 months, right, people aren't just going to keep getting their, whatever, it's €350 a week, and then giving 150 of that to their landlord. Like, you're not, that's not just going to keep happening. And obviously the accelerationist part of me is like, go on, make the landlords push it just too far. And I'm seeing, like, you know, flames and everything. I'm kind of battling, or maybe we could just temper the worst edge of this and make, you know, have it roll on for a while. I can't see it. Like, it has to change. The landlord issue will have to change if it goes on for more than even, you know, 4 weeks. Like, I look at the US and it feels like the US is everywhere else responding to COVID, but on steroids. Like, it's so, you know, I suppose everyone's been expecting the US for years now to kind of bubble over into huge, and, you know, there's been kind of little bits of it, but I'm looking at this now and, my uncle's father-in-law is a chief surgeon in a hospital in Houston. And he was saying, like, you know, all the media going out there, they have loads of tests. He was like, we've nothing. Like, a lot of people aren't covered to come into our hospital, but also we have no equipment. We have no PPE. We have nothing. And like, it kind of starts to make you think, you know, with such a militarized country, what's going to happen over there? And with such huge inequality, like, it's so frightening to think what will happen in the US.
I spoke to Finn Dwyer from the Irish History podcast about something like this, looking for precedents in history, and he said that the one thing that was terrifying about the US was that they will then, because the people who have the guns tend to be the right-wing militias, that if there is civil unrest, that it's a terribly scary place to think of. So it is, it's, you know, in terms of the democratic thing, it's a very scary time. Martin, you wanted to come in?
Yeah, I think Macron has probably gone further than any other country in the EU to head off civil unrest or civil discontent. I think he has done more than anybody else. I think that's forward thinking. I think it's very forward thinking. If this is going to last any longer than a couple of weeks, you have to forward think. And he's done it. He's locked it down. People will have enough money to get by. And they won't be paying rent. Big thing.
Yeah. Well, there's a potential there. There is a potential for the title. Like, I saw in the Financial Times, the REITs were tinkering on the brink of, because they strip out all their money effectively as tax efficiently as possible, and they leave nothing in it, and they pay out their shareholder value or whatever phraseology you want to put at it, that they're already panicking that they're not going to make enough money over the next while that they could actually end up going wallop. Whoop-de-doo. You know what I mean? Like, it would just be brilliant. It would be imagine the actual flood of properties coming. Like, people keep saying they're a small part of the market. They are. But they're also a huge part of certain areas, like, you know, up to 40% of certain electoral divisions. I know myself and Sorsha, we've spoken about this before, but the fact that, you know, the power is then in the people, that if there's no evictions, I know that, well, if there's problems getting an income into the house, I would be more prone to say, yeah, well, let's have a rent strike. And I know that's kind of, people are going to say I'm going a bit over the top, but no, I'm really not given the choices people have had to make, and the choices people had to make in the global financial crisis, when it wasn't, you know, a global pandemic, it was just purely bad debt that was rolled up and sold as AAA rated that brought down the world. We don't have time for this time. We do need more. And I think it's also important that you point out the things that can't be unseen. Martin, you talk about it all the time. You know, once the toothpaste is out of the tube, it's very hard to put it back in. Saoirse, can I ask, just if this goes on, and Martin, okay, let's say it is another 6-7 months, when do we start putting together, you know, these 4 or 5 things that people can rally around?
I think they're already there. When I read about movements, organizing and stuff, I'd be the worst organizer ever. Like, I will show up and do whatever I can, and I need someone to give me a list and tell me go do that, and I'll do it. But how these things ever come about, it's almost like there needs to be a certain number of factors already there. And like with this, I think they're already there. I think the housing will not go back the way it was. I think health will not go back the way it was. Obviously, I would love if the environment didn't go back the way it was. But I feel that so much more, like, while it's just as deadly and just as threatening, even probably even more so, because it's slower and less direct. Like, a virus is really easily pictured rather than like sea level rise or more intense storms and stuff. And I think, like, I just can't imagine how they could ever go back to saying, no, you can't get healthcare, because or you can, but it'll be 3.5 years. And so, like that, I don't know, how do people start organizing that? Is it just you just keep talking enough until you say, right, and then we're going to, you know, organize, like, or, you know, whatever the area you're in.
The template is there in one way. And I know, because remember, Martin, you'll know, you're the oldest person I know. When they first introduced income taxes and like that, you know, they were a temporary tax. All of these taxes were temporary until they weren't temporary anymore.
I think it's baby steps. If you look at just even today, there's a crisis in bins, so they're putting up the costs. Just nationalize it. Snap of the fingers, nationalize it. Just bring it back. Snap of the fingers. There's nothing else to do. People are going to be stuck at home for a prolonged period of time. They're generating more rubbish in the home. Plus, waste is now a hazard. It's a low hazard, but it's still a hazard. It has to be taken care of properly, has to be disposed of properly and timely. So what do I think? I think it should be nationalized, and I think there should be 2 bin collections a week for the crisis. I think that's in everybody's best interest. So I just snap at the fingers, make the decision, do it. Money is not the issue. That's one thing.
It never is.
No. Hospitals, they're never going back. They're never going back. They can't. Not unless you're going to build 10 hospitals in this country overnight, the private hospitals are not going back. The idea that they're going to rent them for any length of time is nonsense. They are nationalized in all but dotting the I's and crossing the T's. They're never going back.
Do you believe that, though? Because that's the obvious thing, you're like, don't give it back.
I absolutely 100% believe it, because this is going to be with us for 18 months or until there's a vaccine. You know, that's really how long it's with us. So for the time, until they come up with a vaccine, we need the beds. It's that simple. And not only do we need those beds, we do actually need the 4 and 5 hospitals as well. Yeah. So, you know, the idea that it's ever going back to private, forget it. It's done. It's dusted. Nobody wants to say it. The idea that Airbnb is ever going to be anything again, it's toast. Yeah. Are you going to go and stay in an Airbnb in Iran? You're not. So, you know, it's over, it's done, forget it. The tourism trade, where are you going to come from? If you're coming from a country that's infected to a country that's not infected, do you have to spend 2 weeks in quarantine? Do you have to book a month's holidays to get 2 weeks, spend 2 weeks in quarantine, and then probably have to spend 2 weeks in quarantine coming back? It's all done, it's all dusted, it's all over.
So you don't see, and this is probably such a stupid question, they're not predicting this to have, like, you know, the flu season has flu season and then it dies off in the summer. They're not expecting that at all, are they?
Nope.
No. No, there's a lot of talk that they were saying that hopefully when it starts to heat up, but we spoke to Joe Haslam in Madrid, and Joe said it's not cold in Madrid, Tony, and it's one of the worst places in the world for it. You know, the cluster of Madrid is just terrible, and you know that they don't really know is the truth, and then to make matters worse, even if it goes away for 3 months over a summer and it comes back in normal flu season. You know, and there's no vaccine, and we're right back here where we are. But I do think some things will start coming back. I do think they'll come back with caveats. I think if you want to get on a plane, you will sign a waiver. I think there will be, you know, there'll be almost these things of you're now doing this. And I do think that sort of stuff, you know, and I know we're talking to you in terms of also, you know, societal changes, but we needed to make huge changes anyway, in the face of, say, the climate threat. Some of these steps are going to bring us on that journey, because housing policy is climate policy. Health policy is climate policy. Employment rights is climate policy. You know, if you can fix those things where people get effectively a decent universal basic income to a degree, you are already offsetting the need for certain things that are detrimental to how we tackle carbon reductions. So the idea then is to actually show that, because I nearly argued with a guy online, and I just told myself, you know what, don't waste your time, Tony. There's a lot of people at the moment who are convinced that, you know, the bill will fall due at the end of this. And when you try to explain to them that the bill never gets repaid, never under capitalism, the bill just gets restructured and terms get the only time a bill gets paid is if a country walks outside, throws a rock, and an oil thing springs up, and they all of a sudden become rich overnight. That's when national debts get wiped out. They don't get wiped out by we grow our way out of it is what the economists will tell us. What they mean is we just restructure it. We spoke briefly about the need for the politics to change. In terms of, you know, where we stand now, there is a constitutional crisis, you know, looming with what's happening with the Shannon. You're a candidate.
Always a candidate.
Always a candidate, never a bride.
A bride, yeah.
I think we've just named this
podcast episode.
Explain this constitutional crisis to me.
The Dáil can't pass any new legislation unless the full Seanad is sitting, and that needs the 11 Taoiseachs nominees. It's not that big a crisis. They're totally overblowing it. Like, there are ways we could get around it. So say they had... whatever, say there was, you know, a unity government or a national government, it could be said that that Taoiseach nominates 11 with the support of the Dáil. You know, yes, there are ways around this. Or you divvy it up proportionally between the parties. Mm. Or it's a common vote for those 11 seats from, like, a by-election from the TDs and the senators. Like, they're making this out like it is the most enormous constitutional crisis. It's not. It's only a convenient constitutional crisis.
Who's making it out?
Those same journalists that are saying that
the Greens need to get.
It's why the Greens need to go in.
Yeah,
and they don't realise that, like, we're in the middle of a full blown crisis, and you need to make decisions fast, move quickly.
Well, I mean, it's funny that they were happy enough to call for, again, the Irish Times ran an article by a former Fine Gael special advisor saying basically ignore the constitution and let Leo lead on, you know, and that was run as if it was genuine news.
Yeah. So, and did you see what happened in Hungary today? I'm telling you, watch this closely. In Hungary today, Orbán is now the emperor of Hungary.
Yeah, he's given himself powers that he can stay for, you know, till year done.
Power by decree, he is ruling by decree. Hmm. Now that's the
EPP.
EPP.
Yeah, but they love that. They all harbour.
Oh, these real dictatorship dreams.
Yeah. Oh, they would love the idea of being supreme leader of Ireland. It's just love.
And that, but. Look what's just happened in Hungary. And don't ignore it. It's a really, these people are closer politically to Fine Gael than they are to anybody else in Ireland. To any other party in Ireland.
Yeah.
So, and you know, we have to be careful.
Yeah. Like, you know, while there's a space for all these good things, I suppose there's probably mirror, what is it, the dark mirror pod version of this podcast going on somewhere where they're like, how can we exploit this crisis and make the worst possible world?
That's called a cabinet meeting.
Yeah. Well, it's true. You know, there's other, everyone's looking at these crises and thinking, right, what can we get out of this?
The greedy is in, but we're outside of any box we've ever been before. So all that will eventually fall away. And it'll just be, how do we get through this? All that, like the construction thing was a real example of you know, builders can work. They're kind of immune from this virus. Oh, great, yeah, thanks very much. A couple of days later, they're put back outside the door. And that's what's going to happen. They're going to keep putting the vested interests outside the door until the only interest that's left is the people.
Martin, this is the most hopeful I've ever heard you, Martin. You've never sounded so pessimistic and optimistic at the same time.
No, but I am quite optimistic. I am quite optimistic. I think what's to come is better. I think we've suffered this crap for long enough.
It should have died at like 2008. Mm. And what is that? The strange non-death of neoliberalism. Who wrote that again?
Completely, it just lived on. But that's why we are actually, like, coronavirus, neoliberalism didn't cause coronavirus, but it caught us with our pants down on being capable of dealing with it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, are you going to now say at the end of all this, coronavirus was a problem, austerity exacerbated it, so the solution is more austerity? It just doesn't make sense. It just doesn't make sense.
Okay, so right, we know what we want. We know what we were doing. Sorcia, we're gonna have to get cracking on some sort of new Green Deal for Ireland, and we'll have to show people how housing policy is climate policy, and all of those actions will work. Go on, Martin.
Can I just ask, how is the planet doing with this?
Well, so there's a whole load of different kind of maps coming up saying, oh, look, nitrous oxide is down here, carbon emissions are down there. Obviously, airplane emissions aren't down as much as everyone wanted because a lot of them are still flying in order to keep their airplane slots. But, you know, there's a huge amount of congestion off the roads. I think if this just rolls on for 18 months, our food is going to become a huge issue. Food and land use. And, like, obviously, the racists really kind of sully any talking about this. But, you know, for a long time, the further pushing into wild areas and into wildlife populations has been a source of diseases. And there was, you know, there's been papers and books written over the years about how big farm causes big flu was one of them, for instance. And it just talks about how this expansion, this constant swallowing up of wild areas, in conjunction with the really connected globe, has allowed diseases and infectious diseases that would have usually stayed quite still to become everywhere. And, you know, I think we do have to look at our relationship with food production. Like, obviously, I've been saying this for however many years, but now also in the context of COVID-19, do we? Because, you know, even in Ireland, and you can't say it because you'd be jumped on, if you talk about how we don't really produce enough food for ourselves, like even all the beef we produce, like 66% of our livestock feed is imported. And, you know, trying to avoid any notions of, close the borders and like that, you know, even talking about feeding ourselves and feeding Ireland, can I always find it. Can it lead to quite nationalistic things?
You have been talking about food for years. Absolutely. Food security and how we deal with it and how we can, you know, because Ireland would say we produce enough in the calorific intake to feed 60 million people, never mind 6 million. And yet we also know that our, you know, because we're gone to certain models, that doesn't mean 3 square meals for everybody per day. It means certain types of farming. In terms of going and tackling that, it is going to be a huge shift for people. I'm right in saying that we need to change, like, the very methods of how we farm. Yeah.
Yeah. and everything, because I think oftentimes, sorry, go on.
No. I'd like you to elaborate on that, because I always hear this, people food insecurity, and people go, can't be possible. We're the greenest place in the world.
And like that, you know, even talking about food security, that's quite that says, all right, there's enough food for this many people, but it doesn't say who has access to the food, or who's controlling the food, or what kind of quality of food it is, or what that food does to the environment.
Yeah.
And so I often like to talk more about food sovereignty, which kind of brings in an element of choice and control over our food systems. And like in Ireland, if we keep farming the way we're farming, and we're farming quite similarly to how a lot of ex-colonies farm, we have specialized in one or two raw materials, and we are massive exporters. And which, you know, it leaves us really vulnerable to the fact that, say, well, especially in Ireland, because we produce luxuries, like nobody, you know, prime Irish beef would be the first thing off someone's shopping list if you're squeezed for money, or if the shelves are kind of getting a bit bare. Same with dairy, same with cream, you know. And so what I would love to see is a shift towards, first of all, a lot more wildlife in Ireland, because, you know, we need wildlife if we're to have a healthy agricultural economy, because it does all the water cleaning, it does all the pollination, it does all the soil creation. Like, we need it. That's it. It controls pests, it controls diseases, it provides input. But on top of that, what I'd like to see, and we do have quite a lot of land ownership per person in Ireland compared to a lot of Europe, because of the land redistribution in the early 1900s. But what I would love to see is areas start to produce more food and start to keep things circular. So instead of all the food, you know, being grown in certain areas, which I'd love to happen, instead of it all going into the city and then, you know, waste being flushed out into the ocean, if we could start looking at how, when we're building these new communities that we're talking about, you know, we're not just building houses, we're not just building units. New communities, or say we, you know, revitalize new communities, how can we integrate food systems with them? How can we close as much as possible that metabolic rift that exists between the countryside and the urban areas? But now what currently exists is a metabolic rift between countries on the other side of the world and Dublin, for instance.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, it shows, I think, that, you know, the COVID-19 shows how quickly things can break down and how quickly countries can say, that's not the rules anymore, we don't export to you.
Either of you, you've probably both heard the, it's like a poem to capitalism, I Pencil. It's a very old one. It's about, you know, I'm a pencil and the lead comes from Brazil, the wood from here, that, you know, and it just shows that. And then it goes, all of these pieces around the world all come together and produce this pencil for a dollar. And that's capitalism, that's the free market. But what you're talking about then is what people have to understand is, people like me will have to understand that I can't have my Kenyan coffee beans all the time. If we want to do these things, we will have to have, so, you know, we have to source and eat and drink and do the stuff locally if that's what we're going to tackle. And Martin's getting upset now, you know.
I'm just thinking bacon and cabbage 7 days a week, you know?
No, I mean, like, it doesn't have to be that way at all, though. It doesn't have to be that way.
You can
way,
eat cause... wood pigeon. You can eat...
Well, people always say, oh, you know, we'll have to regress, you know, back to whatever it was at all. You know, we don't really, or, you know, we would a bit, but we do have technologies and we do have, you know, huge glass houses, and we can at least have a few nice things, and you can have coffee, but it'll be a luxury. It just means you can't get it for 99 cent. A stockpile now. This is what I always think of stockpile. I'm like, oh, it's vacuum packed. I'm not joking. Like, every time I see those deals in the basket, double packs, I'm like, we should not stockpile things. And I keep thinking in a container somewhere just so I can fill it with coffee for the rest of my life. Have bacon, cabbage, and coffee.
Well, I think we're kind of lucky that we are in Ireland, and it was toilet paper that they went for. My brother is in Oz, and the gun shop sold out of bullets in Oz.
Oh, God.
And they do that even in the States. I remember there was a certain, I don't even remember, was it the AR-15 gun or something?
Yeah, the rifle, yeah.
Talk about it being banned or something like that. And people I know were buying pallets of the bullets for it.
Yeah.
Like,
my brother was told that, you know, Australians will bend so far and then they won't bend anymore. And that's what he was told. Australians will bend so far and then they will not bend anymore.
Well, so, can we get a bit more positive? There is a lot of good that can come out of this. I've seen, you know, I agree with Martin. I don't think people will accept. And Source, you put it very well. People won't accept that healthcare depends upon your wallet or depends upon your need. It has to depend upon need now. Same with these things. And again, the nonsense of, you know, the bill falls due. The bill will always fall due. It will always just be rolled over.
But even just on healthcare there, I think also people have finally seen, you know, that there are certain things that only, like, health only exists as societal health.
Yes. Yeah.
And yes. I think that had been lost on people for a long time. Because the idea that you go to a private hospital and you're fine, not if there's a virus, you don't.
No. Saoirse McHugh, thank you so much for joining us again on the podcast. Listen, and we will stay in touch. You enjoy your fresh air and your thing. And Martin, you stay locked away. You've to cocoon, don't you, Martin?
And as much as possible, yeah, and as much as possible. But, you know, my daughter works, so, and she was working in the airport and now she's working in a supermarket and she's cleaning baskets and trolleys and she has to do it. It's something she has to do. So it's a vector. So we just take as much care as we can is really what we're doing.
He throws Dettol at her when she walks in the door.
And holy water.
Thanks for listening, folks. Just, you know, if you can, please, the price of a cup of coffee will really help, even though we can't have coffee anymore. We're a luxury item. No more coffee.
Green. green. More coffee.
The price of a water, a hot water with salt in it, as my old nanny used to give me. Talk to y'all soon. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.